Before we start, a quick reminder. This podcast discusses sex, violence, and social oppression. It may be uncomfortable or triggering to some. If you're listening out loud, parts of this narrative may seem sensitive to those around you.
Delhi High Court is all set to pass the all-important verdict on homosexuality. All eyes are on the judiciary.
If you've been listening to this podcast for some time now, you definitely know that July 2009 was a highlight for the LGBTQI community. That's when two judges in the Delhi High Court decriminalized consensual sex between adults, regardless of their sexual orientation. Here's Chief Justice AP Shah reading from the conclusion of that verdict.
If there is one constitutional tenet that can be said to be underlying theme of the Indian Constitution, it is that of inclusiveness.
By the way, all of the Chief Justice's quotes that we're using here come from an interview conducted by a project called Envisioning Global Human Rights. Thanks to Professor Nancy Nicole for permission to use it. People who had been inside the courtroom for the hearings expected this outcome. The judges had been very sensitive to the plight of LGBTQI people in India. But still, there was shock when Chief Justice Shah read these words out loud.
We declare that Section 377, insofar as it criminalizes consensual sexual acts of adults in private, is violative of Article 21, 14 and 15 of the Constitution.
And there was celebration.
Homosexual sex between consenting adults. It's a monumental moment in Indian law.
By the time we reached the door, there were cheers and there was a lot of commotion in the court. So I could not witness this, but I could hear that.
NAS Foundation, the NGO which had filed a public interest litigation in 2001, had finally won. But as with any legal case, there was also a loser. The defendants who had argued for Section 377. The groups and individuals who wanted the law to stay in its entirety. The interveners who joined the case of their own volition, hiring lawyers to argue that homosexuality was a sin and that HIV/AIDS was a money-making conspiracy unleashed by American pharmaceutical companies. Back in 2009, Shivam Vij was a 20-something journalist, and he was curious about this group.
I was curious to see, to know, and to find out who were the people who argued against it in the Delhi High Court, and what did they have to say. And I went and interviewed two of them, and it was a hilarious experience.
From ATS Studio, I'm Sindhuri Nandakumar, and this is 377, a show about an outdated law, its lingering impact, and the movement to get rid of it. In our previous episode, we talked about how the fight against 377 grew into a broader movement.
There were 12 organizations and 5 individuals.
How there was community mobilization. How the case evolved from one about public health to a broader one about rights.
A right to life and liberty issue.
The Indian government.
In 2003, the government at the time issued a homophobic response about 377.
Society disapproves of such behavior.
And a year later, the Delhi High Court actually dismissed the case. Both these events helped unite the queer community and its allies.
So having that be the response of the government of India actually brought together the various constituencies and groups.
The issue was to broaden it from what the NAS petition was.
How should I put it? We didn't get on with each other at times. But we stuck it out because we just believed in what we were doing and we thought we were doing the right thing.
Today, we're going to talk about the hearings that happened in 2008 and the verdict that was announced the following year. Who was NAS fighting against? Who are the people who didn't want 377 to be read down? What were their reasons and how did the battle in the courtroom proceed? Going through the courtroom transcripts, I found a lot of arguments which, even though I couldn't relate to, I recognized. Things like, do it but keep it a secret. It'll erode our culture. These are Western things. We don't have them. God meant for man and woman to procreate and have children. If you hadn't heard it at school, then you heard it from some family member whose homophobia came on full display at those annual get-togethers that you dragged your feet to. We've all heard these arguments before. They're not coming out of the blue. And the voices in the courtroom were, in some ways, speaking for that section of Indian society. In 2006, Bharatendu Prakash Singhal entered the case against the NAS Foundation. He wasn't directly connected to the matter. He wasn't a gay man, and he wasn't named by the NAS Foundation as a respondent. But he stepped in on his own and became an intervener. And the more you learn about him, the more sense that decision makes. Journalist Shivam Vij, who was working for Open Magazine at the time, visited BP Singhal in 2009. This was soon after the Delhi High Court's verdict.
Curious about him anyway. He was this old RSS uncle. He was a former IPS officer. He'd been in the Raj Sabha, he'd been in BJP.
He was also a Hindutva writer and ideologue with strong opinions about character and morality. Shivam met the politician at his Noida apartment.
He was a gracious host. He gave me a good argument and some ginger juice. He didn't take much time to respond to anything. He was ready with his arguments. He was ready for a good fight.
I think Shivam would put this interview down as one of the most memorable of his life.
So BP Singhal, also this kind of 70, 80-year-old grandfatherly figure. I'm a 25-year reporter with another 20-something photographer. And we are here discussing anal sex. And that itself was kind of bizarre. And, you know, I had a hard time discussing anal sex with BP Singhal and not laughing and not being amused by it.
As it turned out, Mr. Singhal's argument was not straightforward or overtly homophobic. Except, well, the part where he thought his side lost in 2009 because the judges themselves were gay.
But the nuance in his argument was he did not want homosexuals to be picked up and put in jails. He did not want them to be harassed. He wanted it to be under the table, under the carpet. He did not want a public culture of homosexuality, celebrating homosexuality of the sort that he feared, rightly so, would come up once it is decriminalized. Once it is decriminalized, you can have, for example, gay bars, right? But in India, the position that people like BP Singhal have taken, or even the others, even later on Baba Ramdev, was a position which was not so much of the denial of homosexuality, but of consciously keeping it under the carpet, under the radar. It should not be something that should be publicly celebrated, quote unquote celebrated.
And to back up his arguments, Mr. Singhal reached out to an unlikely ally.
You know, he actually gave me a lot of printouts from right-wing Christian websites talking about homosexuality being against God's will, what is what the Bible says, etc., etc. And I found it fascinating that on most days, BP Singhal would be arguing against Christians because, you know, the RSS right will say they are missionaries, they're converting people, they're doing this in Odisha, they're doing that in Northeast. But over here, these right-wing conservatives from the United States and in Noida had come together. Nevada and Noida had come together as it were, thanks to the internet.
Let's step in the courtroom for a bit so we can take a look at how these views translated into legal proceedings. The 12-day hearings started in September 2008, and the case was heard by two judges, Chief Justice A.P. Shah and Justice Muralidhar. On day one, Anand Grover, the lawyer for NAS, opened with his arguments. He talked about how 377 was standing in the way of public health efforts against HIV/AIDS. Right from day one, it was pretty evident that the judges were sympathetic to the suffering that queer people faced under 377. The bulk of the proceedings were dedicated to arguments by the Additional Solicitor General, or ASG. Within the Government of India, the highest-ranking lawyer is the Attorney General, then comes the Solicitor General, and then the ASG. The ASG's duty is to represent the government and basically act as its lawyer. For this case, the ASG was Mr. P.P. Malhotra. Remember, this case was about a law, and therefore the government had to step in. But the confusion in the courtroom was that the Union of India hadn't really made its stance on the issue clear. So it had issued the controversial response of 2003, saying that the vast majority of Indians didn't care about homosexuality. But there was another contrasting view. In 2006, the National AIDS Control Organization, or NACO, also a government body, filed an affidavit saying that 377 was getting in the way of its own work. The judges, understandably, wanted to know what the final position of the government of India was. They have since said that NACO's affidavit was the strongest piece of evidence in support of NAS. So the irony that a government outfit was helping bolster the case wasn't lost on them. Here's Justice A.P. Shah talking about that.
The unusual aspect of this case was that the Ministry of Health and Family Affairs argued against the constitutionality of Section 377. They said that it really obstructs the HIV/AIDS prevention program. On the other hand, the Home Ministry sought to justify this provision on the ground of public morality. The stand of the Home Ministry was that if the challenge to Section 377 is sustained, it may be misconstrued as a license for immoral behavior and open floodgates for delinquent behavior.
There unfortunately aren't any public recordings from the courtroom, but we do have courtroom transcripts. So I'm going to need to call in some incredibly talented voice actors. Our producer, Ashim.
Hello.
And co-founder, Gaurav.
Hello, hello.
So since we don't have audio for this bit, I want you two to recreate it.
Okay, so sounds like something to do.
Ashim, you get to be the government lawyer, P.P. Malhotra. So far, you've been avoiding being very clear about what your stance is.
Perfect. Sounds like me.
And Gaurav, you're the judge. You're kind of annoyed Ashim isn't doing his job properly.
That's right. Well, judging by what we're doing here, it sounds like we aren't doing it right.
Play yourself. Correct. Okay, you have scripts ready?
Yes, I have my script ready.
Listen to how they're talking past each other. Malhotra is stuck on the morality, and Justice Shah is trying to figure out whether 377 agrees with the Constitution.
What is the stand of the central government?
The stand of the central government is that 377 is valid.
Are you saying 377 is valid as a whole, even for consenting adults?
That makes no difference. This argument is being raised because there are many people of that kind in society. People are indulging in it. They should be excused because they are consenting adults.
There is no question of being excused. The argument is that Article 21 is being violated. Look at both your affidavits. They are contradictory.
The Ministry of Health's concern is about the health of a person. The Home Ministry's concern is law and order. I'm not saying that these states should be made party, but law and order is a state subject.
This is about the right to live with dignity.
The dignity of society needs to be seen too.
Then argue that point. Don't reduce this petition to one line. Take this issue seriously.
I fully agree that this is a serious issue and requires serious consideration. I'll also show that it will increase the chances of the evil sought to be avoided. That is, the evil of HIV/AIDS. There'll be more people of this nature in society. This will lead to harm in society. In our culture and tradition, men have sex only with their women. You breathe through your nose and you eat through your mouth. Similarly, the phrase order of nature means that if a man wants to have intercourse with a woman, the place is specified. This is an actual courtroom transcript. It sounds like they're making completely different arguments.
Exactly. P.P. Malhotra is fixated on what the law says. It's words and morals. And the judge is assessing the constitutional validity of it all.
Well, the law itself seems against the Constitution. The morality part then doesn't matter.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What fascinates me is that Mr. P.P. Malhotra, as a representative of the government, was required to be there. The government had been named as a respondent. It really had no choice. But people like Mr. B.P. Singhal, they chose to be there, and their conviction was strong. And that was the case with another intervener, Jack India. Journalist Shivam Vij wrote about them too.
Very funnily, for someone opposing homosexuality, his organization was called Jack India.
That's Joint Action Council Kannur, an organization that entered the case as far back as 2002. If B.P. Singhal wanted homosexuality to be brushed under the carpet, Purushottaman Mulloli, the head of JAC India, was a conspiracy theorist who thought there was a far more dangerous carpet, AIDS medication. He thought AIDS didn't even exist.
Purushottaman Mulloli was sitting there waiting to pick a fight with me, trying to convince me that the 377 case by NAS Foundation was essentially one big conspiracy by Big Pharma, American Big Pharma, to sell their drugs in India. He wasn't anti-LGBT, pro-LGBT. He was just anti-HIV/AIDS, which I thought was bizarre. In some ways, he was more bizarre than B.P. Singhal. B.P. Singhal was your typical uncle scandalized by homosexuality.
Mulloli's lawyer, Ravi Shankar Kumar, said in court that there was no evidence that HIV caused AIDS. And he also said that the NAS Foundation didn't come with clean hands and was acting on behalf of Big Pharma, that HIV was a propagated disease. To which Chief Justice Shah snapped, saying, "People are dying. What are you saying?" When the lawyers for B.P. Singhal and JAC India were making their submissions, the judges often seemed irritated. They repeatedly kept asking for hard data to back these claims about HIV denial, about the NAS Foundation running a racket and trying to deceive people. At one point, Chief Justice Shah said that he had never seen such a low level of submissions. He asked the lawyers to focus less on ideas like morality and virtue and more on constitutionality, since that was what was being argued. He pointed out that the court wasn't interested in decoding every single word in 377 as much as it was keen to figure out the constitutionality of the law. The following year, the judges delivered their verdict.
We declare that Section 377, insofar as it criminalizes consensual sexual acts of adults in private, is violative of Article 21, 14, and 15 of the Constitution.
The judgment went beyond the argument that the NAS Foundation had made, that the law was a public health impediment. The two justices broadened it and made it about fundamental rights. I spoke with Sunita Khajur, a senior director of CREA.
CREA is a feminist human rights organization based in the global south and led by southern feminists. I think it was unprecedented in the way that the judgment was formulated. First and foremost was that it spoke about constitutional morality rather than the public morality. And thereafter, I think several judgments after that have spoken about constitutional morality.
Now, what exactly is constitutional morality? It's a principle of using the Constitution and its guarantee of rights as the guiding principle for law, rather than what people, or the majority of people, think. That's what made untouchability and the practice of sati unlawful, even if they were supported by a large number of people. Here's Justice Shah again.
I can give you some examples like the untouchability. So this was approved by majority, but the Constitution has prohibited untouchability. The untouchability was abolished. There is a distinction between the popular morality and the constitutional morality. We said that it has to be constitutional morality, which is to be basis for the state's right to interfere with the person's fundamental right.
The judges quote Dr. Ambedkar, the father of the Indian Constitution, who said, "Constitutional morality is not a natural sentiment. It has to be cultivated. We must realize that our people have yet to learn it. Democracy in India is only a top dressing on an Indian soil which is essentially undemocratic." Now, this might sound like jargon to you, but let's stay with the idea of constitutional morality for a bit, because honestly, it's fascinating.
It's important from a biographical point of view, because for him, if you said that popular morality will govern, then the Dalit person has no future in contemporary India or in the India of his time, because you are subject to the prejudices of the majority community.
I spoke with Arvind Narayan, lawyer at the Alternate Law Forum, about this concept and its value to Dr. Ambedkar's life.
So constitutional morality is a very important point, which says that, you know, whatever might be the majority opinion, at this moment, there has to be a way in which we limit its particular sway. Because if majority opinion cannot be allowed to determine the way we live our lives. So majority prejudice, majority opinion cannot become a way of depriving a minority of rights.
If you remember, Sunita from Voices Against 377 said three things struck her about the judgment.
I think the second thing was kind of looked at the notion of harm in a different way. So rather than saying that homosexuality harmed the family values and things like that, it actually spoke about how the LGBT community was being marginalized and oppressed and being harmed by this law. And I think the third important thing that this judgment did was that the scope of the judgment, it kind of went beyond just LGBT people and issues. It kind of offered protection for all minorities and minority issues. And I think in doing that, it talked about the idea of a sexual citizenship. So it was very, very important.
The judgment said the expression of sexuality requires a partner, real or imagined. It is not for the state to choose or to arrange the choice of partner, but for the partners to choose themselves. It acknowledged Indians as sexual beings and guaranteed them the right to express themselves sexually. Tarunab Khaitan, a professor of law at Oxford, makes this point especially well.
In India, sexual choice and sexual autonomy cannot and must not remain an issue for LGBTQ movements alone. India is not just a country where gay people need to come out as gay. India is a country where heterosexuals need to come out as sexuals.
And so, in July 2009, the NAS Foundation breathed a sigh of relief. It had won a long, hard battle. Anjali Gopalan, who had filed the petition that led to this verdict, speaks about the feeling of victory that she felt after the ruling.
But yeah, it was quite incredible. The 2009 judgment was just unbelievable. A phenomenal judgment.
Even now, looking back, Anjali finds the whole thing hard to believe. The sheer scale of change she had been a part of seemed overwhelming.
I remember I couldn't process it. Like, I was there and I was like, what does that mean? What does that mean? You know, like, I just couldn't.
Afterwards, outside the courtroom on the grounds of the Delhi High Court, she began to understand what this would mean for queer people across India. Here is a clip of her talking on the day of the verdict.
You know, the fact that this law decriminalizes homosexuality is a huge step forward, because one of the main issues was a lot of police harassment because this behavior is seen as criminal behavior, and that will stop now.
By focusing on fundamental constitutional rights rather than current laws or morals, the judges had delivered the promise of equality on which India was founded, which Nehru wished we would consider not in a narrow legal wording, but rather in the spirit behind it.
He said, words are magic things often enough, but even the magic of words sometimes cannot convey the magic of the human spirit and of a nation's passion.
But the worst was yet to come. In 2013, two judges of the Supreme Court overturned the Delhi High Court's ruling. It was a big blow to the LGBTQI community. But one person who would have appreciated it wasn't around anymore. When journalist Shivam Vij tried to reconnect with Mr. B.P. Singhal in 2013 to ask him how he felt about winning, he found out that the politician had passed away.
A few months before, and I actually kind of felt sad for him. I would have loved to do a second interview with him.
Before we go to 2013, let's take a look at how the Delhi High Court's verdict impacted queer Indians across the country. I'll be joined by Gautaman Ranganathan, a lawyer who has worked very closely with grassroots communities. As progressive as the verdict was, Gautaman found that it was not trickling down to the people. That's on our next episode. But for now, I'll let Chief Justice Shah have the last word.
This court believes that Indian Constitution reflects this value deeply ingrained in Indian society, nurtured over several generations. The inclusiveness that Indian society traditionally displayed literally in every aspect of life is manifest in recognizing a role in society for everyone. Such persons can be assured of a life of dignity and non-discrimination. It cannot be forgotten that discrimination is antithesis of equality, and that it is the recognition of equality which will foster the dignity of every individual. Of course, it was one of the most significant cases which I decided during my career as a judge.
Special thanks to Dr. Nancy Nicole and Chief Justice A.P. Shah, who granted us permission to use excerpts from a documentary by Envisioning Global Human Rights at York University, Canada. And to Gaurav Vaz for lending us his voice acting skills. Courtroom scenes were recreated using transcripts and material available on the Orinam website. 377 is a production of ATS Studio, a division of All Things Small. This episode was hosted by me, Sindhuri Nandakumar, and written by me and Ashim De Silva, who also produced the show. Script supervision is by Deveya Bopanna and Archana Nathan, with editorial input from Sidin Varukut and Supriya Nair. The music and sound design is by Madhav Ayachit, and the episode is mixed and mastered by Ankit Suryakant. Our executive producer is Gaurav Vaz. Our legal consultant is Amshula Prakash. We received administrative support from Anushka Mukherjee. All clips and voices used in this podcast are owned by their original creators. You can find more information about this episode and our show notes at allthingssmall.in/377.